Hello everyone, welcome to the second season of the series of podcasts with IEEE Electron Devices Society Luminaries. As the world's largest professional organization, IEEE plays a significant role to enhance the quality of our life. Electron Devices Society, or EDS, encompasses activities involving electron devices, the main enabler for today's digital world. I'm Muhammad Mustafa Hussain, a professor of Elmore Family School of Electrical and Computer Engineering of Purdue University. I play a variety of roles in different capacities within the Electron Devices Society of IEEE. In this series of podcasts, we will be interviewing those EDS members who have made remarkable impacts in our society through their innovations and dedication. Our guest today is someone who has received 2021 IEEE Cledo Bonetti Award as well as IEEE 2012 Electron Devices Society Education Award for pioneering contributions to the development of online laboratories for microelectronics education on a worldwide scale. We are speaking with Professor Jesus Del Alamo of MIT. Jesus Del Alamo is Donor Professor and Professor of Electrical Engineering in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science at MIT. He holds degrees from Polytechnic University of Madrid, Telecommunications Engineer 1980, and Stanford University, MSEE in 1983, and PhD in EE 1985. From 1977 to 1981, he was with the Institute of Solar Energy of the Polytechnic University of Madrid, investigating silicon photovoltaics. From 1981 to 1985, he carried out his PhD dissertation at Stanford University on minority carrier transport in heavily doped silicon. From 1985 to 1988, he was research engineer with NTT LSI Laboratories in Atsugi, Japan, where he conducted research on 3-5 heterostructure field effect transistors. He joined MIT in 1988. Over the years, Professor Del Alamo has carried out research on transistors and other electronic devices in a variety of material systems. His research has involved silicon solar cells, bipolar junction transistors, and metal oxide semiconductor field effect transistors, MOSFETs, silicon germanium heterostructure devices, gallium arsenide, indium phosphide, indium gallium arsenide, and indium gallium antimonide, high electron mobility transistors, MOSFETs, FinFETs and vertical nanowire FETs and tunnel FETs, and more recently, diamond MOSFETs. He has also investigated quantum effect devices based on aluminum gallium arsenide / gallium arsenide heterostructures. His current research interests focus on the physics, technology, modeling, and reliability of 3-5 compound semiconductor field effect transistors for future logic and terahertz applications. He's also interested in fundamental reliability physics of gallium nitride transistors for radio frequency or RF power amplification and power switching applications. More recently, he is involved in exploring the potential of ferroelectric hafnium zirconium oxide and proton intercalation electrochemical devices for analog non-volatile memory applications for future neuromorphic computing systems. Professor Del Alamo's students have earned numerous best paper awards at national and international conferences for his research on indium gallium arsenide and gallium nitride transistor technology and reliability studies. He was awarded the 2012 Intel Outstanding Researcher Award in emerging research devices. The 2012 Semiconductor Research Corporation Technical Excellence Award, the 2019 University Researcher Award by Semiconductor Industry Association and Semiconductor Research Corporation, the 2020 IPRM Award, and the 2021 IEEE Cledo Brunetti Award. Professor Del Alamo teaches undergraduate and graduate level courses in electronics, electron devices, and circuits, micro and nano fabrication technology, and advanced semiconductor device physics. At some point, he was also involved in exploring the potential of internet accessible laboratories for science and engineering education. He has received numerous teaching and achievement awards at MIT. In 1992, he was awarded the Baker Memorial Award for Excellence in Undergraduate Teaching. In 1993, he received the H.E. Edgerton Junior Faculty Achievement Award. In 2001, he received the Louis D. Smolin Award for Excellence in Teaching. In 2002, he received the Omar Bose Award for Excellence in Teaching. In 2003, he was named a Mac Vicar Faculty Fellow. In 2007, he was appointed Donor Professor, a distinction that continues to today. In 2012, he was awarded the IEEE 2012 Electron Devices Society Education Award for pioneering contributions to the development of online laboratories for microelectronics education on a worldwide scale. From 1991 to 1996, Professor Del Alamo was a National Science Foundation Presidential Young Investigator. In 1999, he was elected a corresponding member of the Royal Spanish Academy of Engineering. In 2005, he was elected a fellow of the IEEE. In 2014, he was elected a fellow of the American Physical Society. In 2015, he was granted a doctor honoris causa by Universidad Politécnica de Madrid. He was elected a fellow of the Materials Research Society in 2019. Among other service activities, Professor Del Alamo was editor of IEEE Electron Device Letters from 2005 to 2014. From 2013 to 2019, he was director of the Microsystems Technology Laboratories at MIT. Since 2019, he serves as editor-in-chief of IEEE Electron Device Letters. How are you doing today?
Very good, Muhammad. Thank you very much for selecting me for this interview. Let me start there. And in fact, I never thought that anybody would consider me a luminary in this field, particularly after seeing the real luminaries that you have interviewed earlier in this podcast series. So I feel very honored to be part of this, and I'm delighted with this. Let me just say that, yes, I'm doing very well. We just finished the academic term. I gave my grades on Friday. So it's always very busy at the end. So now I'm looking at the summer as a time to focus on other things and hopefully be a little bit more relaxed.
Well, you are well deserving here. So thank you for actually sitting with us today. And obviously, we had to start somewhere. And we are in our second season and we are here with you. So my first question, actually, this goes back to the very early on, which is to start with, how was your childhood, your school life, any regret, the fun memories? Let's talk about that.
I had a happy childhood in a small city in Castile in Spain, which is where I come from. I come from a modest family, and I got interested in electrical engineering at age 10, essentially. I already knew at that time that I wanted to be an electrical engineer. And that is because at school, we started building radios and playing with electronic circuits, and that just completely hooked me into electronics. So I went on to study telecommunications engineering at the Polytechnic University of Madrid in Spain. And there, I fell in love with semiconductors. I got involved into research on solar cells. I enjoyed that immensely. And that's where I decided I want to do a PhD. And I want to do it in the United States. And so that brought me to the United States.
Okay, great. Every time I have been in Spain, I really loved it. It feels so homely, so calm and quiet. All those places by the Mediterranean. So next, actually, let's talk about when you went to the college and you said that you started working on the solar cells and you fall in love with semiconductor. So what aspect of solar cell really intrigued you? Obviously, there is definite benefit, but when if we go back, like, you know, the 20, 30 years, these benefits were, they were discussed, but they were not completely felt by a wider population. So what aspect of solar cell research that really intrigued you?
Yes, as an undergrad in Spain, it was right after the oil crisis. I think it was the first oil crisis when I was a student. And so there was a lot of funding that became available and a lot of interest around the world in investigating photovoltaics and solar cells. And so I took a class as a sophomore on semiconductors and semiconductor devices, and I just absolutely fell in love with semiconductors. And the professor was doing research in his lab on solar cells. So I asked him, could I help you out? Could I work in the lab as an undergraduate student in your research projects? And so he put me under the wing of a graduate student who was doing his PhD, and I work now over the following 3 years with this graduate student on his PhD research project, which was silicon solar cells. And it was actually an interesting concept that is in fact becoming commercial right now, which is known as bifacial solar cells. These are solar cells in which the back of the solar cell, instead of being opaque, actually also has a fine metallic cone. And so it's exposed to light. And so therefore it can catch light that reflects from the ground on the back of the panel. And if you paint that ground white, say you have rocks and so painted white, you actually can collect maybe 20 to 30% more energy that wasn't available before. So it makes essentially the whole solar cell a lot more efficient. So that was a concept that way back, my professor, Professor Antonio Luque, was already investigating. I got involved into that. It was a very novel concept. It was very exciting. And we got many results, published some papers. So I really got a sense of what it meant to do device research and be part of the scientific community. And so that's when I really got hooked into semiconductors. And I decided I want to operate at a higher level. I want to do my own PhD and I want to do it in the United States.
Great. I think, like, you know, the engineering aspect, the architecture aspect of the solar cells that was very fascinating. I know Professor Ashraf Alam, we had a conversation with him. He actually recently started working on also the bifacial solar cells. It has a lot of benefits, especially in the sub-Saharan countries, right? Like, you know, the desert areas, there's a lot of light reflection. And if they can be picked up, that obviously can be very useful. So let's talk about your PhD. You came to USA to do so. So how was your research, the relationship with your advisor, your the group mates? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I came to the United States to do my PhD. I went to Stanford. I went to Stanford because at Stanford was a professor, a young professor at the time, Richard Swanson, who was very famous and already young as he was in the world of solar cells. So my professor in Spain made introductions, and I got to visit one summer, and eventually I got accepted to graduate school and I joined his group. And Richard Swanson eventually became quite famous internationally because he's the founder of SunPower, which started this company, commercialized the most highest efficiency solar cells that have ever been made on silicon, single junction solar cells that have found their way to many installations around the world. So I joined that group. I did not do research on solar cells for my PhD. I did study the physics of transporting heavily doped silicon, which is a region of heavy doping in silicon that you need for solar cells, for bipolar transistors, for MOSFETs. They are everywhere. And they were very interesting physics of transport in heavily doped silicon and recombination. So that was the focus of my thesis. But the rest of the group was doing research on solar cells, and I kept track of what was going on there. Stanford is really an awesome place. I have very fond memories. It's a beautiful campus. I do remember off research very fondly my eating club, which I was part of to get the meals. And one of the things that you have to do as being a member of the eating club is you have to cook. So I was part of a Sunday dinner cooking crew. And because it was Sunday, we had somehow a bigger budget. And we also were, more ambitious in the types of dinners that we wanted to prepare for the rest of the community. So that was really fun. That's where I fell in love also with cooking, which is a hobby that has remained with me ever since.
Great. Just keep an eye. 2 weeks from now, the podcast with Dick Richard Swanson, that will be live. So I had real pleasure, talking to him, and he actually talked about you. So yeah, it was great. And obviously, every time I have visited Spain, one thing I really like that there is a lot of different ways to cook eggs. I actually didn't know. So that's great. I'm pretty sure that all your friends, they really enjoyed your cooking, and obviously until today. So let's talk about your first job. When you graduated from Stanford, where did you join and how did you like it? Let's talk about the experience that you had.
Yeah. So my first job was when I graduated with my PhD from Stanford. And I decided to get on the move again. And this time I went to Japan. So I was in Japan for over 2 years. I worked in the research labs of NTT, which is the telephone company of Japan. Essentially, I worked in the Dell labs of Japan, in the research labs for communications in Japan. And the reason why I went there is because as a student at Stanford, I became aware of the emerging field of 3-5 compound semiconductors for electronic devices, also for optical devices. And this was something that I realized was tremendously promising. I learned at Stanford about 3-5 technology, about heterojunction engineering, band gap engineering. And this looked really promising to me as a whole new area with new degrees of freedom to design better electronic devices. So I said, I got to learn about this, and I'm going to go to the source to learn about this. Everything was really emerging out of Japan. The high electromobility transistor was first demonstrated in Japan in 1981, which is the year when I started my PhD. So this was all coming out of Japan, and I judged, okay, this is what I need to go to learn this new technology. So I was there for about 2 years. It was really a great experience, both from a professional point of view, but also from a personal point of view. Japan is really a fantastic, intriguing, extremely interesting country. I took the time to learn Japanese. So I learned quite a bit of spoken Japanese. And so that allowed me to make many friends, travel around, and really immerse myself in the culture. And so it was altogether a phenomenal experience. In fact, I would recommend, and I do recommend to my students here, that they should really consider going overseas for a few years at some point in their studies to learn some new exciting technology, but at the same time to get a tremendous life experience at a time in their lives when they can really do it.
I fully agree with you, I have lived in Saudi Arabia for 12 years before I moved to Berkeley and then to Purdue. And this was actually, from a many different aspects, an enriching experience, and especially for my daughters also, the friendships they have built. They used to go to a school where students, all the K-12 kids, they were coming from 125 plus different countries. Wow. Where do you get that, right? You get the whole world here, right? Yep. Yeah, so it's really fascinating and the enriching experience. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you a question which actually has been debated quite a bit, and that is eureka moment. That on many occasions, many find that they had eureka moments, and some actually suggest that they have frequent eureka moments. And on occasions, there who have suggested that there it was a natural evolution of the things that we were doing. So what is your perspective? Do you feel that you had also eureka moment, or you have frequent eureka moments, or you think that it's kind of a natural evolution of the things technically that you do?
Yeah, it's a good question. I consider my eureka moment, perhaps a moment where I have just described to you, the moment in which I saw band gap and heterojunction engineering with 3-5 compound semiconductors emerging eventually that also was applied to group four semiconductors, silicon germanium, silicon carbide, and eventually 2-6 semiconductors and others. So this was a really fascinating new degree of freedom that I saw for semiconductor and device design, that I saw that this would have tremendous potential to enable new functions and to enable much higher performance in all dimensions for semiconductors. So realizing that and deciding that I wanted to learn about this and I wanted to do it where the technology was emerging, I consider one of the smartest, perhaps luckiest moves in my life. As for eureka moments, you know, when you become obsessed with problems with research, every once in a while, so you might be stuck for a long time, you can't quite see what's happening, you can't quite see the light, and all of a sudden you have an idea, and that's it, it puts it all together. You all of a sudden, all these results and all these problems, all of a sudden, they make sense. And it comes spontaneously, you can't do anything about it except just being obsessed in trying to solve a problem. And that happens with some frequency. We just finished a couple of PhDs in my lab, and there are a number of key eureka moments when we had an intuition about something and boom, that was it. That really was the key to put things together.
Great. I think like, you know, it's sort of like it's happening, right? Because of your passion about something. And at some point you realize that, oh, okay, so this is the key. So identifying that is most probably the eureka moment. You have a very large portfolio of diverse things that you have worked on, especially after your PhD, you focus specifically on 3-5 compound semiconductor-based devices. Any specific one that comes to your mind now, which you are very proud of? Obviously, all of these are your children, but like, mm-hmm. I'm not asking you to choose one over another, but I'm just saying like, you know, that sometimes the context matters, right? Like, you know, that you know that there were things that were not exactly in complete alignment with your objective, but eventually it came out. So you feel like, you know, that with everything that I could achieve that and any associated memory with that.
Yeah. As you said, I am very proud of a number of intriguing projects and exciting results that we have obtained in my lab in the course of my career. You mentioned 3-5 transistors. Yes, I've been working for many years. And in the last 15 years now, perhaps maybe more, we had a very intense effort on nanoscale 3-5 transistors for various designs. I am immensely proud of what my students and postdocs have accomplished in terms of work records and frequency response, electrical characteristics, size scaling, unique intuition about reliability problems and unique pieces of physics. It's been so much fun and has been so interesting. But more recently, if you ask me to select something, I'm very proud of a recent foray into new devices for analog artificial intelligence applications. This is a whole new domain that is emerging as artificial intelligence is showing this seemingly superhuman ability to solve some problems that were very hard to solve in the past. There is really a great desire for these very powerful techniques to be deployed in many other kinds of problems going forward. But it's very clear that a bottleneck for the progress in artificial intelligence is going to be the performance of the hardware, and particularly the energy efficiency of the hardware. Unless that increases in a really substantial way, it's going to become a bottleneck to how far algorithms can go. And so there's a lot of interest around the world on developing energy efficient AI hardware. And one specific direction is to use the analog domain instead of the digital domain for some of the algorithms. And so that's an area that I have taken an interest in the last few years. And just in the last couple of years, we have come up with some really exciting new devices, which are fully silicon compatible, based on new physical principles. In this case, it's almost like a nano battery. These are electrochemical devices where you shuffle protons, in our case, around that allows you to fabricate these non-volatile programmable resistors that are at the heart of analog neural networks. And so we've gotten really exciting results in the last few years that I'm very proud of, particularly because it's a new field for us. And it also, because it's a collaboration with colleagues here in Department of Material Science and Nuclear Engineering, which are experts in battery physics and electrochemistry. And so this unique combination of their understanding of materials and ionic movement and our understanding of device design and device technology and prototyping has brought together this new device concept that just looks really, really exciting. So I'm extremely proud of that.
Great. We are looking forward to the many interesting results coming out of your lab and this effort. I would be actually switching to a lighter portion of our conversation now, which we call the rapid fire round. This is very popular with our younger audience. And here we will be asking you some questions to know you a little bit more up close. We prefer that you respond very quickly in a one or two words, but you have, it's your show. So, you have the time to elaborate if you feel so. Okay. If you're ready, I'll go ahead.
Yep. Let's go.
Okay. What are your hobbies?
Oh, as I indicated, I love cooking and I also like traveling and hiking with my wife.
Okay. Music or movie? Which one you enjoy more?
Oh, that's impossible to choose. I love good movies and good music. So I want them all.
Okay. Any specific genre of music and movie you like?
Yeah, if I had to choose, again, I'm very open in what I want to watch or hear or listen to. I love big choral works, but also intimate piano. And in terms of movies, I like intrigue, spies, heists, financial shenanigans. In fact, recently, on a completely different direction from these ones that I just mentioned, I immensely enjoyed Coda, which is a new movie that came out this year. That won a bunch of Oscars. It's a fantastic movie. I loved it.
Right,
this place near Boston.
Yeah, I think this is with the people who don't talk.
Yeah, yeah, it's an extraordinary movie.
Right. Okay, what is the book you are reading now?
Well, I recently finished Americana by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, who's a Nigerian author. I loved it. Okay. And in fact, I had read earlier Half of a Yellow Sun, which is an extraordinary story. And that's what got me to continue to read from this author. Americana was also very, very fun and very interesting.
I'm
thinking about what I should read for the summer, since we are just starting the summer. My wife has recommended A Long Petal of the Sea by Isabel Allende. And this is a story that takes place in the Spanish Civil War. So that's always a topic of very interesting.
Okay, very good. Obviously, you love cooking. You have mentioned this and you actually emphasized. So what is your favorite cuisine?
Oh, of course, Spanish. More generally, Mediterranean.
Very good. Yeah, of course. Very tasty. So you mentioned that you hike. So is that the sports you enjoy?
I like running, biking, swimming, hiking. Yep. Out there. I want to be out there.
Okay. And one of your key hobbies is travel. So if you can pick a favorite travel spot?
Well, we always like to go to new places. With the pandemic, we had to stop. We enjoy going to the Algarve in southern Portugal. We have a house. So that's always a reliable place for us to relax. But we certainly also like to travel and visit other places. We've been trying to go to to Ecuador, but the pandemic hasn't let us do it. So the Galapagos. So we'll keep trying.
Okay, great. So now we are pretty much at the end of our conversation, and here we will be looking into the future through your eyes. So from that perspective, my first question, what is your thought about electronics in the future?
Well, I am very bullish about the future of electronics. First of all, we clearly see the value of higher performing electronics to human society. Ubiquitous communications, smart systems everywhere, improve the diagnostics and medical treatments in health, efficient electrical energy management. I mean, you name it, electric cars, the applications are spreading throughout human activity in ways that are really fantastic. And clearly, if we can deliver higher performance electronics that address humans' problems, the world will be a better place. So, first of all, I'm very bullish about the potential of this technology to improve the human condition. And second, I think the spigot of innovations and new discoveries, and new materials and new fabrication technologies, it just continues to open wider and wider. There is endless possibilities for innovations to happen. There are breakthroughs that continue to emerge. And so it's a really exciting field. And then third, I'm also very bullish because this is going to remain, in my view, a very rewarding profession for many years to come. It's going to be fresh. It's going to be exciting with many new opportunities that I have been mentioning. It's going to keep changing. And I think it's because of its impact in human life, it's going to continue to be very rewarding emotionally, but also from a material point of view to be part of this profession. So it's all fantastic future.
Yeah, I know that everyone that I have interviewed, I think they all emphasize on this point. Landstrom actually put it in a very articulate way. He said that, like, you know, that we are just getting started. It's the second phase of electronics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? We have just scratched the surface. Yeah. I fully agree with you and every one of you. So we all know about that. And I think one of the reasons that we are having all these podcasts essentially to, in a sense, to connect with the next generation. So what has been done, who are the players, and, like, you know, where it can go. Okay, so my next question is there anything that strikes your mind which can be better today? It can be technical, it can be non-technical, doesn't matter.
Well, that's a good question. You know, the thing that first comes to my mind is non-technical, and it's a bit dark, but that's, I think, the nature of the question, since it's about visualizing a better future. I am very worried about the corrosive effect of lies and disinformation on our democracy. It's just very, very worrying. I think it defies human intelligence that all these obvious falsehoods that we see around us, they propagate freely and they manage to infect so many people around us. So somehow somebody ought to invent a lie detector that automatically flags lies and disinformation and corrects the record for people to know that is incorrect. That's a lie. That's you shouldn't make an opinion based on that. I don't know how to do this, but I hope we can engage clever people to try to figure this out.
No, it's absolutely worrisome because not only the disinformation, the way that the social media is actually designed, it really plays on the reaction. You know, they literally call it reaction. As human being with the significant brains, we should depend on responses, measured responses, rather than just the reaction. So there was a good debate and discussion we had in Berkeley a year back that if Facebook for a week removes their like button, what happens economically and socially? These are important, the socio-economical questions, right? And I think that's where there will be, there is a tendency. Denzel Washington, we saw an interview recent where he said that in the past I have to perform for the Broadway or for my friends or for through cinemas for a wider audience. But now I perform whatever I want to get millions of likes, right? So that's kind of has become a disease. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so my next question is, what application would you like to see in the future that does not exist today?
Yeah, you know, during the pandemic, we have all learned the power of remote work and remote collaboration. And we've been able, in certain professions at least, we've been able to really accomplish a lot working remotely, away from the office and working with colleagues that are dispersed around the world. So as we start going back to the office, but this culture of remote work is going to continue, I think we need technologies that really help us to continue to work remotely, where you have a few folks in a room that are present, but where we have other folks around the world that are far away. Remarkably, one of the things that we are finding as we are coming back to work in our work sites is that with some folks remotely, it's very difficult to have that hybrid system where a few colleagues are in the room and a few colleagues are dispersed. It's actually very difficult it's much easier if all of them are dispersed around the world than if a few are in a meeting. So I've been dreaming of technologies that we could use to bring us together in an intimate way, in a productive way, in this manner that I have described, right? So we need extended reality, immersive teleconferencing, maybe holographic telepresence. There's a few nice experiments out there. Maybe multisensory and tactile communications. I think, you know, figuring this out would be really great, because it would allow us to work better with more freedom and flexibility, also to be in contact with family and friends and meeting people remotely. That's an idea, you know, that I would like to see if we could figure out going forward.
Definitely. The first time I visited MIT was in 2003. I just started my PhD. So I went to MIT Museum, and then I saw the holograph, the projection.
There's a good collection of holographs.
Right. And most of the things that you're mentioning, they're kind of like, you know, there are a couple of things that's already like on the MIT Media Lab that's happening. So it's kind of like, you know, the cohesive idea of like, you know, the it's not exactly meta. It's like, you know, we don't need to be like, you know, the cartoonish. But I think like, you know, the far should be, far is not going to be exactly far. It's as like, you know, as near as possibly we can get. And I think the tactile part is something which is going to bring a completely new dimension, because it's not only about that we are having meetings, but we do know about like, you know, the remote surgery, like, you know, the yes. remote tactical operation. And there are things like, you know, we also hear about like, you know, that there is a very interesting documentary going on in Netflix, our national parks. It's so Barack Obama, he is the narrator. And so they went to the places where in the past nobody went, you know, that in and how the habitats over there, that they are living their life, right? So these occasions, I think I'm pretty sure that many people, they would like to go there, but at the same time, we have to keep them pristine. So if there are ways that we can actually go and can kind of virtually mingle, that's going to be fantastic. So there are tons of potential out there. Okay, so here is my last question from the script. And this is going to be for our young audience, our next generation. What is your one piece of suggestion or advice for our next generation?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I'd say that it's a really great time to enter the field of electron devices. That students that are listening to these podcasts, if they're thinking about this field, boy, what a fantastic time to enter this field. You know, with Moore's law starting to slow down, it still has a big runway. You know, it's nowhere near to be dead, but it's slowing down. The field is really ripe for new innovations that will launch a new microelectronics revolution. And I think you want to be, you meaning the young people that are listening to this podcast, you want to be on this from the very beginning. You want to be study as hard as you can, to get rich hands-on experiences, to be open to learning new things, because you really have an opportunity to be a key player in launching this new electronics revolution that is going to continue to bring just so much improvement in human life. So I encourage you very much to explore this field and to try to pursue a career in this field.
Great. Okay, thank you so much, Jesus. And this is a question that I am asking. It's from me. And then was there anything that you wanted to discuss or you wanted to talk, but I didn't ask you?
Oh, I haven't thought about that one. It's a very good set of questions. I like it because you have personal questions, as you said, where it helps to show me as a person, which I am. While also reflecting on my career and providing advice for young people, I think you have a very good balance of questions. I don't know how to enrich this any further. It's very good.
Thank you for attending this IEEE EDS sponsored podcast. To listen to other EDS podcasts as well as benefits and resources EDS offers, please go to the website eds.ieee.com.
www.ecosystemsforlife.org. Thank you for listening.